I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. It's time to go into the world of sports with Tony Cox. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Farai.
So it feels like spring, and that can only mean that March Madness is right around the corner.
Well, Farai, you know you're right about that. And it really kicks into gear this Sunday with the selection of the NCAA basketball tournament seeds. 65 teams will be put into four regional brackets, and then they'll spend the next few weeks battling it out for a chance to go to the Final Four and ultimately on to the holy grail of college basketball, the championship, which will be decided this year in the great state of Texas at San Antonio on April the 7th. So, here to talk about it is Greg Lee, sports editor for the Boston Globe, and D. Will from the sports blog Sports on My Mind. Hey, fellas.
How you doing, Tony?
Good to have you back. Before we talk about who's in and who's out of the big dance, let's look at some of the conferences, starting with the Big East. I'm coming to you first, D. Will, because by my count, five Big East teams are ranked in the top 25 of the AP, with Georgetown at number 9, followed by Louisville, Notre Dame, Connecticut, and Marquette. But in the conference, these teams are much tighter. And since so many folks think that the Big East is already the toughest conference in the nation, I'm not one of them, by the way. I'm biased toward the Pac-10, but never mind that. How many teams, D. Will, do you think will come out of the Big East to go on to the tournament, and which ones are they going to be?
I'm actually not really sure. I know that Syracuse played their way out. Providence might have played its way in. Teams have chances. If two or three teams make a run, who knows what's going to happen? Beyond the five, I really don't want to say, because anything could happen from here on out. Honestly, it's a crazy year.
That's what makes it really interesting, isn't it, Greg Lee?
Yeah, I think in the Big East tournament, you know, I was listening to Bob Knight yesterday on his debut on ESPN, and he said that from today to the rest of the Big East tournament, there's no upsets because the Big East is very balanced and there are a lot of strong teams, and I expect seven teams to be in that, you know, tournament.
Really, seven? That's a good number. Oh, well, you don't agree with that, D. Will?
I think Greg's probably right, and I could see eight, I could see six, I could see seven, and, you know, it's just one of those seasons. And watch out for mid-majors teams getting in.
Well, remember, the ACC is on a down year, and only probably going to have three definite teams from the ACC. So, right. ACC is going down.
Well, what about the Pac-10? Let's come across the country. Mm-hmm. Are they a tougher conference than the Big East? Now, they've only got three ranked teams right now, UCLA at number three, Stanford and Washington State. But they've got a lot of schools that are dangerous, including USC and Arizona. Yeah. So how many Pac-10 teams do you think are going to make it, D. Will?
I can see up to six getting in. I can see USC getting in. If Oregon wins a couple games, they'll get in. If Arizona wins one more game, I think they'll get in. And that's going to be six.
That's a good number.
I agree with that. Arizona had the toughest schedule in the nation. They had a dozen losses, but there are a lot of quality losses, and they played a real tough schedule. So I think six teams will get in into the tournament.
Whose conference is tougher, Pac-10 or the Big East?
I think just the styles of play are so different. For the tournament play, when you're playing a more slow-down game, you tend to believe the Big East because they're more accustomed to the half-court sets. They have a lot of big men, a lot of good, strong front-court guys. In the Pac-10, it's a free-for-all going back and forth down the court and outscoring people. And in the tournament, that style of play doesn't really work. So I tend to go with the team with a big man and a half-court style that you're adaptable for the tournament.
Have you seen UCLA this year?
I was going to say, overall. Ben Howland.
Overall.
Okay.
Right. Overall. Yeah, overall, the Big East, yes. But the top teams, Washington State and UCLA, play East Coast ball, and that makes them dangerous.
They absolutely do. In fact, do you think that UCLA is, they are still a prohibitive favorite to at least make it to their third straight NCAA Final Four?
I think they'll be there. I concur.
Yes. Ben Howland brought that East Coast game out to the West.
Yeah, he absolutely did. One more thing before we move on away from the men. Every year there are dark horse schools that slip in and surprise the big ones. Winthrop knocked off Notre Dame last year in the first round. Butler in the past. Troy in the past. Any sleepers in the tournament this year, D. Will?
Yes. Drake. Very dangerous
Drake,
team.
Yeah. Drake,
yes,
very
Butler,
dangerous.
Very dangerous. Butler and Drake are two of the most dangerous teams in the country that people relatively around the country don't know about.
All right.
Yeah, Drake's been in the top 10 most of the year, so they're not really a surprise. But to most people who don't really follow the game, it's going to be a surprise to them.
We didn't say anything about North Carolina or Duke or Memphis or Tennessee. Will they be there at the end?
Yes.
I'm not a big believer in Memphis yet, only because of the conference they play in. It's not one of the stronger conferences in the country, so I don't know if they can really turn it on and off. Tennessee, they play a good style of basketball. I still haven't really believed in them yet, but I know UNC will be there at the end.
All right.
Yes, UNC, definitely.
We've got the guys covered, so let's talk about the women. From number one to number five in the AP ratings, there are only two games in the loss column that separate number one Connecticut from number five Maryland, with North Carolina, Tennessee, and Stanford in between. Now, if Connecticut goes on to win it all, guys, it would be their fifth title of this decade. And here's my question. Do the women get the love that they deserve now?
No.
You know, the biggest news, although this week there's some big news coming out in terms of how the recruiting of Maya Moore, the star freshman of UConn, this week, and that really shows that, you know, the women's game is getting a little noticed in terms of, like, with the guys in terms of recruiting wars. They haven't had any real big news since, you know, the Dine Imus thing with Rutgers last year.
Well, you know, speaking of that, we had Rutgers coach Vivian Stringer on the show the other day talking with Farai about her school and the importance of the game for them, the same way it's important to the men. So here's what Coach Stringer said about making it to the championship game and what it meant to her team. Let's listen.
And I was so proud of them because I can remember seeing some of them cry or think that they couldn't, and then to see their faces on television or USA Today. And, you know, this is what it's all about. For us as leaders and as parents and as people that care about our young people, to take them to places that they don't think that they can go, have them accomplish those things, and then with that level of security and confidence, they can take on the world.
Well, you know, of course, 24 hours after that, Greg, the whole thing blew up in their faces with the Don Imus comment. So, a year later, not much different?
No, in terms of the coverage of women's basketball, no. But the biggest thing, though, is that they sell out their tickets for the Final Four. It's always sold out. It's a hard ticket to get. So it's really funny that they don't get that much coverage, but at the same time, the events, you know, at the Final Four always sells out.
All right, guys, let's move on to another topic, because spring training is winding down and America's favorite pastime is going global. While the Yankees and Tampa Bay Devil Rays were duking it out in St. Petersburg yesterday, the Dodgers and San Diego Padres are in Beijing, China, for an exhibition tour on what is becoming an annual rite of spring for the big leagues. Now, don't forget your passports, everybody. So how well is this international thing working out? I mean, we know places like the Dominican, Japan, Cuba, baseball hotbeds, all of them. But I'd never heard much about China. What about you, D-Will?
No, actually, there hasn't been much about China until recently. There are schools developing over there that are similar to the Dominican schools, but actually, they're just starting. This, I believe, is more due to the Olympics, and it's a showcase. And I think in the future, yes, China will be big on baseball. And as I said, as soon as they get the foundation in place for those schools, watch out.
You know, Greg, apparently China may become the next giant farm league for the big leagues, but there's no Yao Ming of baseball in China right now. No. So how do you think the Chinese are going to react and relate to the Americans?
Well, I think the thing that, you know, baseball is following what the NBA has done in terms of marketing the game, making it a global game. So I think as really with, you know, how the NBA went over to China and how the Chinese embraced the game, and now with Yao Ming there, it'll take some time. But I think the Chinese will embrace the game of baseball once they learn the game, actually appreciate the game as Americans do. And I think, you know, the Chinese will, you know, follow suit like they have done with basketball.
Well, let me ask both of you whether or not you think that with all the U.S. baseball players' involvement in the news lately and the alleged steroid use that surrounds them, does that change the international perception of the game, do you think, both of you?
I don't think so. I think people in other countries are relatively sheltered from that, from all of that news. And so no, I don't think it'll have any bad effects or ill effects at all.
Yeah, I don't think,
You don't either?
I agree with that. No, I don't think so.
All right, I'm going to talk about another baseball topic. I'm going to come to you first, Greg, because you're in Boston. Okay. Going back to yesterday's melee between the Yankees and the Devil Rays, maybe there will be a new rivalry in baseball now, replacing the Yankee Red Sox hatred with the Yankee Tampa Bay. What do you think about that?
That won't happen, especially the two major markets in Boston and New York. That will never happen. But although Tampa Bay, you know, they'll be a scrappy team this year. They want to show that they want to be respected. I mean, Tampa Bay has given the Red Sox fits the last couple of years, and so they've given the Yankees problems. And the D-Rays want to be respected as baseball players and not as a AAA team in Major League Baseball. So they're not going to take that stuff from the bigger market cities.
You know that picture of what's his name, Duncan, right? Was it Duncan?
Yeah, Shelly Duncan
with his foot right up, you know, right where it ought not have been. That's pretty nasty stuff there.
Yeah, with Joe Girardi down there as the manager, that brings a little New York flavor to it too. And there are a lot of New York fans down in St. Pete's too. So if the Rays can develop a Yankee type style of play, they'll get a lot of converts down there.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. One more thing about Boston: how legit are the Red Sox to defend their World Series crown?
As long as Josh Beckett is healthy and they have a great starting rotation, the hitting is always there. And the difference between the Red Sox and the rest of the league is that they have depth at the pitching position, which we know pitching is at a premium in baseball. So I think they have a legitimate shot to repeating.
Anybody in the NL give you any cause for concern?
In the National League?
Yeah.
No, not really. You know, the Cubs are talking noise again, but until they prove it in the playoffs, I don't believe that. American League is the best teams.
Let's wind up our sports bloggers roundtable for this week with this one last topic. You know, we always have to drop in on the NBA. There's no doubt that the Miami Heat are the worst team in the NBA, even though they won the title 2 years ago. And on Wednesday night, the two worst teams in the league got together. Somebody had to win, so the Knicks beat them and dropped the Heat to 52 losses against only 11 wins. So here's what happens. Pat Riley goes off on a sabbatical, supposedly shopping for college players. D-Wayne, their number one player, out for the rest of the season. The team is tanking. Is it okay for them to just cave in when they still have some season left ahead of them, D-Will?
Yeah, I don't think it's correct for Pat Riley to go scout players. I saw him in the stands at some games watching college players this past week. That's what they have a scouting team for. They have a crew of scouts that go do that. So allow your scouts to do that, Pat. As far as Dwayne Wade is concerned, it is an NBA tradition that when your star players are hurt and they could hurt themselves some more if the season's going bad, they kind of hang out and get well. But Riley, I think that's one of the poorest things that you could possibly do as a coach.
Do you agree with that?
I totally agree with that whole assessment. Dwayne Wade needed to be shut down. He's been playing hurt the entire year, and he's still a young guy. He's your centerpiece. You don't want to, you know, take any chances of him tearing up anything because he's already injured. With Pat Riley, that is just a sign to, you know, he doesn't trust his scouting department. And last I checked, he is the president and GM, so if you don't like your scouts, then fire them.
it's the most bizarre thing, but I guess losing just makes people do whatever they feel they have to do to get away. I appreciate it, gentlemen. Greg Lee, the online sports editor for the Boston Globe. He talked to us from WGBH Studios in Boston. D. Will writes for the blog Sports on My Mind. He spoke with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio in Burlington. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
No problem.
And thank you, Tony. That was NPR's Tony Cox.